Welcome to the Archive Project. I'm Andrew Proctor, Executive Director of Literary Arts. The Archive Project is a retrospective of some of the most engaging talks from the world's best writers from more than 30 years of literary arts in Portland. Support for the Archive Project comes from Cole Haan, the fashion brand that's acknowledging extraordinary people who write, read, and shape the world through their extraordinary stories. All this and more at colehaan.com. In this episode, we hear from three astonishing contemporary poets, Shayla Lawson, Stephanie Adams Santos, and Jane Wong. In 2018, Literary Arts hosted a series called Poetry on Broadway in collaboration with Portland Five's Center for the Arts in the Antoinette Hatfield Hall in downtown Portland. Our show will be in three parts, each highlighting one writer performing their poems and talking about their work. In this first segment, we hear from Shayla Lawson. Lawson is a 2017 Oregon Literary Fellowship recipient and the author of three collections of poetry, A Speed Education in Human Being, Pantone, and I Think I'm Ready to See Frank Ocean. Here's Lawson.
Hi, thank you for coming. So I am going to be reading out of I Think I'm Ready to See Frank Ocean. Start. The name of how music plays often means what it is. A record, a witness, a cassette, a small blank conch. I rewind this track every time I want to feel ice shaking off wings. I say I want to see Paris and mean I have never made love. I remember the laughter, the years of blissful know-nothing enchanté as love scrawled in Sharpie on compact discs, a mixtape, a shot to the heart. The ocean, a Lincoln lost on its way Pacific. Carefully clicking on the sea change of its own composition, the bullet pop, the click of the deck, the crack of a knee's crease pulling from leather bucket seats. And as I tune to the east, the ocean plays, stations westward. In visions, the gleam of ward rooftops is actually coast. This is called Street Fighter. You would have been my first kiss if you didn't always beat me in Street Fighter. I wanted to be Chun-Li. Sometimes Guile for the backstory or Dalsum. I'd call myself a pacifist, KOing heavyweights with my elastic limbs. I expelled most of grammar school in an arcade attached to the Regal Cinema 6 at the mall adults stopped going to, or running boys down wild during recess, trying to punch them in the face. That's a very specific type of child. And then I wonder, you know, I don't wonder, but it's like, and then, you know, you write all these poems, like I wrote this entire book of poems about like love gone wrong, and it's just like, well, this is probably where we started. Even when I had your blush wet cheek pinned to the cinnabar dew on asphalt, I wanted you to understand what I heard behind my eyelids, the color Goethe attributes to the energetic, crude, robust. I paint the town yellow red. Love is the game of the young, nostalgic, grotesque. My lips spare no vermilion. I Hadouken Ryu's gi back to his tape deck. Songs for women. Sorry. So about like, it's bad when you start chuckling to yourself about like the internal joke in your own poem. But I'm like, I don't like doing the thing where you tell the whole story of the poem prior to. But anyway, I do want you to know in this poem, I talk about a Tumblr feed called Dancing to Pony Alone. And I just think it's very important for everybody in the world to know that there is actually a Tumblr feed called Dancing to Pony Alone, which is nothing but people dancing to Pony Alone. If you're not familiar with the song Pony by Ginuwine, it is a classic. I wouldn't necessarily recommend that you YouTube it for age reasons. And, you know, like it's definitely not appropriate for work, but there ain't no love songs for women. Only little boys who shimmy out their father's vintage, harmonizing to wood-paneled living rooms, one hand housed around an invisible mic, or singing to the image of their own abs on laptop cameras, as evidenced by Dancing to Pony Alone, an entire Tumblr feed of ostensible melancholy. They slow dance to half-open tubs of Vaseline, the rehearsed vinyl of ponytails, halter tops, and tight jeans. And sometimes young ladies get mentioned in the liner notes of their lungs, like all boys are Icarus, lost sons crooning to the lyric of their own self-destruction. There ain't no love songs for women, I say, only you. But I lament to the most popular pronoun in top 40 music, as is often true of the second person, you can't decide. Fair enough, I am a catalog of heartbreak's admission. I write my own verse. I switch the carpet shag from beige to brindle in the voiceover. I sing La Da alone while our song comes on. I try not to get rhythm and depressed. Rhythm and depressed is kind of like my favorite thing I've ever written. I even like got it embroidered onto a sweatshirt. But then I also realized I hit a point where like wearing a sweatshirt that says rhythm and depressed probably just doesn't seem like irony anymore. And I'm like, maybe I shouldn't, but sometimes I do, you know? Sometimes I feel that feisty and I pull it out. These are sadder poems. Just not that it means you have to stop laughing, but just, you know, I just want to know we're making a tonal shift. Swim good. My father never learned to swim good enough to keep from drowning. The beach was a battle I knew he'd lose, the water roaring him deaf of me. There is nothing more hard than to watch a grown man punch his fist through the ocean, flailing at the loam with its every grasp. I saw my daddy drown every day. I could count the silence in his submission to his bathwater, his face under the faucet a sip too long from his morning coffee. The lure, don't die, much bigger than I could muster. Daddy swam at the very lungs, chest tethered to the EKG in the suit of him, heart fluttered. Every time he submerged, I would chorus in the undertow, don't die, don't die. Every current ebbing back what was left of the beach. There is nothing more hard than to see a grown man draw his fists at the ocean, say, I hope you learn to swim good. My daddy never did. Dust. To put the devil out of place, I quit writing. What he can't read, he can't take, sure as be. I'm nothing special, just a book marked with the lit end of a match. I'm not too proud. I'd burn it all back. I wish I could, but there's no erasing past the best advice I got. I quit writing. I turned to dust. Sometimes I hear the library of my loves laughing at me. Everything I worship, I either disappear or destroy. I'm nothing special. No, what you can't see, you can't take. My ink, my one truth left. I wrote everything we are. I'm not too proud. I'd take it all back in like the lit end of a match. I can't erase the past, but leave no ink behind. The dust I was, the dust I do remains. I return to the book and rip through the pages with all my ink. I keep writing. I don't put you out here. I find religion is just the best advice I got over and over and over. The pages turn to prayer. I think about this poem a lot just because for me, I kind of counted it as a very pivotal moment in like my development. I grew up in Kentucky, and I had never thought about the number of times that I had grown up seeing a noose knot, but growing up in Kentucky, it was something that people still use culturally for a lot of things. So if my neighbor wanted to tie up a tire swing, noose knot. Or if, you know, somebody was going to hang ghosts from their tree, noose knot. And then it's also about like the first time that I saw the Ku Klux Klan. But the situation that I have with my mother that resolves the poem is interesting because, like, after I wrote the poem, I was telling her about, like, remember that time that we were at Winn-Dixie and we saw the Klan and you know, told me to get out the car, and I wrote a poem about it because I just felt like that was really pivotal to me understanding, like, how I'm supposed to feel about myself in the world and with fear. And my mom was like, oh, I was just tired. Like, I needed somebody to go in there and get those eggs. But also, you know, I challenge you too to write a poem about things that scare you and make it funny. Time machine. Sammy Davis Jr. Jr. is the name of my dog. Yes, this comes from another book. Yes, I call him this because he reminds me of a spry black Jew. Yes, this is still racist. Even if I say it to you, the ist wags out from both of us like a feist turned loose. It wears the low-slung, onomatopoeic operatic of tire swing hung from my neighbor's tree, ist, a red cable fashioned as a noose. The revisionist, the southern transcendentalist. They will use this same not come Halloween, the death man bringeth, clinging to effigies of tissue ghosts, or come spring, garbage bags clad in suits of paper mache. The satirist, the iceman taketh away a basketball coat strung lilted and impeached. The arborist, what front yard isn't missing something large and black and fearful hanging from a beech? An ist in each, as the sonic historicist, the sound wearing wind in its teeth, gap-toothed warden, sneer-sucking tongue, and that was just the Disney version. Even now, I may only hear Kentucky, but I will still see Emmett Till and nimble Sammy Davis Jr., Sr., and the golden Cadillac to Kim Novak's hiding in the back seat. They file by the Volvo window parked at the Winn-Dixie. My adolescent panegyrist smudges the film, scans the white sheet, the conic iconic, a family of four, and rain spit grit. I say, Mom, it's the Klan. She looks through the rear view, sucks Maybelline off her teeth before scrounging her purse for bills. Well, you better hurry on in there then. You better get on. Those eggs won't buy themselves. I don't know, sometimes it's easier to make it funny and sometimes it's not. The family that I saw, it was actually from like baby to father. They were all dressed up. I don't know where they were headed, but we had just left Bible study. I do remember that. But what's interesting is that there is a very similar pastiche. There's a Simpsons version of that exact same thing. At some point, somebody decided to draw the Simpsons character sitting on the couch in that manner, which I also find interesting since the Simpsons are supposed to be from here and Portland has its own long and illustrious history. So, you know, none of us are safe. I'm going to read two more poems. White Ferrari. The beautiful ones always smash the picture. Prince. We ride the Gravitron, state fair every summer. Our dilated eyes pen to the desperate hope that weight is real. I cling to walls afraid I'll fly apart completely. You catapult the restraints of time and G-forces. Back to the future, a gravity familiar. I worry falling is something for which I no longer possess the capacity. I look at pictures of white people and wonder what it feels like to land. Have you ever felt like that? Where the ocean is simply a place you've been. Like being vapor is a thing you can vacation from. We replace photographs with flashcards. Love watching people head on shoulders, hands in hands. It has been so long since my delight has been a document. Gran Turismo. We grew up watching black men drive fast white cars through cities of angels, Rodney King, O.J. Simpson, even our father's GTO. We make obsessions and amusements. Was this the future we intended? We defy whatever keeps us down, has kept us heavy, and the ride never ends. In the end, you just figure out how to float. Amidst the guardrails, you always thrilled me. Releasing from the safety, risking death in small dimensions to drift untethered from the past. futura-free. There is no progress, there is only the infinite possibilities of the present. Michelle Wright. In heaven, the clouds slip like the face of the ocean. Like the way before leaves turn gold, they are green. The way before leaves turn green, they are children. The way everything vibrant succeeds. I knew the future is femme, male. Like God gave Adam back his spine. He saw us naked and uttered no poetry. Just held our flesh to his own and embraced us as residents of time. An ocean, agraphy. A corpse takes 250 million years to return to the deep sea completely. Submerged to our chests, our cheeks, we still spit and swallow the dead matter, us enslaved people. What does it mean to say we encounter bodies of water? Thank you.
In this next segment, we hear from Stephanie Adams Santos. She's a 2017 Oregon Literary Fellowship recipient. She's a Guatemalan-American writer, educator, and tarot reader, and the author of Swarm Queen's Crown, and several chapbooks, including Little Fugues and The Sundering. Here is Adams Santos.
Hello, so nice to see all of you. I grew up here in Portland. My mom is Guatemalan. My dad is white with the mixed background, Irish and stuff. I don't know, I'm not sure. But I grew up really strong with my mom's culture and the stories of everybody, how each member of our family came to live here. Those are the stories that live really deep in my bones. Central America, there's so much pain in that history. There's so much trauma. There's so much blood in the earth, in the ground. And people carry heavy, heavy histories, really heavy histories. And so many of us live with them, and so many of us are completely blind to them. And I just think it's so important to have them in the world and to know how real they are. My work is very non-narrative. It doesn't exactly tell stories, but I was thinking about how much my mom impacts everything in my work and how much her stories are in my work, and that the pain and the traumas she's experienced are the pains that I continue to carry and work through. And so this book, I'll read a little bit from Swarm Queen's Crown, and then I'll read a little bit of, actually a lot of bit from a newer thing I'm writing. But this book, it's really looking at what pain feels like in the body and what pain does to us inside, and how, what it's like to live with that weight and to think through it and to see yourself through it. So I thought I'd just read a few of these poems and then read from this other work, which is a little bit stranger. Okay, this poem is called Hazard. What is too soft in this life curves off to ruin, like the diaphanous shawls of a lizard left beside a stone. The scent of freshly cut leaves is harmless, we think, but perhaps the pain of grass, the pain of leaves, carries on endlessly in air. There is always a dark stream in the brain, a little echo coursing in the blood. Oblique is the soul, and the heart, like a toad, is singing from its shadow, trembling, trembling so near to the ground. La luz del abismo. All this time, the world has escaped belonging. I say to the green scent of wind, what's belonging? These crops still rising obscure the place beneath. Perhaps a woman is there. Often I ask what mercies such a form can fetch. She is from the river beneath the river. There I watch her speaking blood to blood to the animals ripening inside. I lie there with her in the stream, marveling, though not wanting to see the coarse reeds stiffening in her hair, or her eyes with the dusk of our cities falling down into a sleep of moss. Mostly, I look in. And this piece I want to read is from a long poem. It's just an excerpt that's sort of interested in like origin stories and myths and how those are made, kind of a blend of history and imagined history. So it has a working title right now, La Selva, which is like the forest or the rainforest. My name was not yet made, but in the body of night, its larva concealed. For the cocoon of its solitude, it slipped into the ground where the rain regressed and the moldering earth again and again obscured its face. And the rain kept coming and the earth kept softening, heating, hardening one stratum after another until it had once again preceded the sounds of the word, gone back to its first oblivion. The not yet born unfurled, unfastened its jaws from the pericarp's lushness, unhooked itself from its own fossil to crawl up the layers, boring itself through stone to the surface, to break its pouch of night on the basement of a swamp. There it grew, a kind of toad in the daytime water, yellow eyes blazing underneath its stony hunger. There it initiated to the movement of flies and salivary glands fixed to the delectable death grease of their forms. Ahem. With the visitation of filth. Ahem. With the breeding of maggots. Ahem. With the landscape of flesh. Ahem. The madness of compound eyes and the sinking, the drowning, the compounding richness of death's work made into meals. Thus fed, the name emerged in the dripping flesh of a thing, wherein the name came again into life in the ecliptic daytime night and the crescent shadows, and crawled into the city and was itself a woman then, who crawled into the bed of a woman. A woman coming home to a woman, two women coming to a bed which was itself alive with the blood-red bugs at night, where their brown bodies smashed, the women and the bugs in the crescent shadows in the night in the city, where they rocked in the blooming of blood unto the morning. And in the light of the morning and upon the fresh dead sounds of the morning, she woke again. The light came quick thereafter. It was raining. The water climbed until nothing more could hold it than it fell. That is the oldest music. The body is invisible, as in not visible. It cannot be seen, not fully, not all at once. It is my holy veil, the sealed scroll I walk with, not knowing what I have. And the agonizing limbs grow regardless. The optic field is wild to begin with. Then the eyes seal shut in the skull to perfect their rounding in the dark. For the ground is a vast accumulation. Seed, 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 seed. Or here's the birth of one thing into another. Or here's the beginning of a young girl's story. Or here is a false beginning, a story whose source has been occluded, a story whose source will never be recovered, because nothing starts with a name. Someone spreads a large leaf on the surface of a body, and gradually it bruises, then yellows, then takes again the color of nothing, and this is an act of the air. Air steers and carries the pungent vapors of the dead. It is a chariot into the sky. The past is yoked across your shoulders with the whole of history, the whole of corpses, the animals, the insects, the gods, the corpses of gods, the corpses of old bodies you have worn, the corpses of all your smiles, the corpse of every knick-knack, the dead of everything slain and laid across your back to be carried, the crack of heat across a plate of bone. That is language. Here's the beginning, a time before the first vision of burning came to her head, from the town of Gresham. The image of a young girl stepping out from her closet converted to a bedroom, into the apartment of brown carpets and a brown couch and a yellow kitchen and a stained wall, and into the sala where Mama and Papa are raising their voices like waves, lapping one over the other, one over the other, one toppling and spewing over the other, one crushed to white foam upon the other, one bleeding like a goat who has drowned, one pecking from the skies on thickened gray wings, one thrusting and tearing, one devouring, one sinking, one following, one surrendering in heat to the ocean, one opening, one swarming with maggots, one eating the other with a thousand tiny mouths of their confusion, one buzzing in the other, gathering in the other's soft tissues until they fester and collapse. This is my mother and my father. Mama and Papa. Their source is occluded. The sound of each voice recycles, turned over from a buried box of music. I can only barely hear, yet I hear it always. When all else is silent, when nothing else remains, it is there. The daughter thinks, I am the color of the wall. The blood in my body has lost and turned to water. I pertain to my sorrow. I am invented by its blows. Now is always the chapter of the mother. Mama, whose name is Alma, whose name is the nameless term of soul, whose name goes leaping into suicide like a deer at the edge of the road, and leaping from the sting of Mariano, who was not her true father, she leapt into the convent, into a black dress, and walked into a narrow hallway until she stood at the edge of her green world and tried to jump. But she was caught by the branches of a lima tree, whose limbs simultaneously hit and held her, whose fruit disgruntled and looked at her through disguised eyes, wrinkled and green like the light through a dream. Somewhere a drowned hand holds itself in the currents of air, in the invisible soft cushions of the lima tree. One green thing catches the other. Lightly she drops through a tunnel and lands with the sleepy weight that curls in the burrow of each afternoon. And a white man appeared on the road, and you broke beneath the shadow, and like a soft towel, your body for a moment grew bodiless, folded and creased and staggered back out into the light. Quietly, the car passed over you again. Now the creature is at the side of the road. The man inside seeing you from the tinted glass, seeing you. You are not like us. Your round black eyes, your tail, your snout, your hide of dark fur, your body, your suffering is not suffering, and he swerved again to break you. And the air lifted for a moment, and your eyes slipped and hollow for a moment. Only sight was holding you, only sight. But rushing past the boundary, I could not catch the numbers, and he drove off and disappeared into the white fog of the road. And so, on that beautiful day, he left us alone together. In the north, Mama built a garden on forbidden land. The deed said, no black or Hispanic shall ever own this land. But so and so she untamed the yard of its yard grass and let the roses tangle high in the branches of the air. She set La Virgencita in a cave of vines at the base of the butterfly tree, and she anointed a tree for the bees, in whose little white blooms they nestle and purr at a forgotten corner where they go unbothered. Mama buried her smallest body beneath the magnolias. When the vultures of the earth began to touch the soul with their beaks, the layers were already lifting, one and then the other, the dark meat of its breast floated apart in the ground. After a spume rose up and the sky was alive, the body singing like locusts, split in half with song, one note in the roots, the other a hiss across the boughs. Her sounds in the roots, her ash and her wind. She leaves a residue the color of ants. A vast psychic weight tumbles in the shade of the magnolia. It leaves an eye, a mouth, two stones in a sentient grave. Beneath the roads, beneath the cities, beneath everything, there are the excruciating memories of people. Insects, too, are people. Every mind that has regarded the world and sought to live and sought to eat and sought to be simply itself, there we are. There they are, the people. Before everything, Mama and Papa tore down an electric fence where the previous owner had imprisoned a horse. The horse had turned its mind into white hot circles, turning and turning. The thoughts cooked on themselves and turned thick like mush. Mama let the grass go wild there. She says we are dull and crass for not knowing the stories of horses, for not knowing the psyches and the myths of other kinds, that we are evil in our privileges, forgetting the ape in the paw of the human body. We are evil for forgetting the horses in their blue graves, where they are crumpled as parchment, erasures, in grim mounds, the remainder of having carried a natural freight in bondage and touched only by the cruelest and slightest antenna of white men with ruddy cheeks, with a taste for meat, knowing nothing of the truth of these great bodies that have carried every city and every shrine, stone by stone, that have done the digging, worked to oblivion beneath the sting of wire and boot and whip. And what were they before all this of being beast and flat-backed carriers of the race, huffed to death around the track to the music of whistling and strange names, or held sharply by the mouth and beat like a bag of fluff, admired but beat, or burned and numbered? And what was left? What but calla lilies falling on the earth, marking the place for God to see? Thank you so much.
In our final segment, we featured Jane Wong. She is the author of the collection of poems, Overpour. Her work has appeared in many places, including Best American Poetry in 2015. She's received fellowships and scholarships from the U.S. Fulbright Program and the Breadloaf Writers Conference, among others. Here's Wong.
Thank you all for being here. I'm going to be reading a few poems from Overpour and also a few new poems kind of in between. I always start with a poem, usually in my mother's voice, because she is my superhero. And throughout the night, I'll just be reading a few other poems in her voice as well. So I'll let you know when I'm like not Jane. But she's also me, so it's confusing sometimes. But I'll start off with a poem in her voice, and it's called 24, and so a few of these poems will be titled this particular year in her life. So this is her at 24 years old. And the only thing you need to know about this is that my parents were arranged when she was 19 to be married. 24. Salt can dissolve more, such is the law. Antlers shine, bone clean in the yard. Buzzards at the bus stop count off children. We have two children. To see how we truly behave, we must lie side by side and let anger slide. This stupefied air we hold a knife to the neck. These nights, crickets rave at the door. Lamb's ear sprouts a leprosy, softening the yard. Our daughter covers her mouth, smog of the heart, cloud and cough I couldn't even see my hands in the morning. The sky breaks open, how I break my roots from you. Overpour of regret, there's too much blood in a cow to comprehend. At 20, I halved caution and called it Jane. To want all that is yours, I married you, marred you, missed your kill and kiss for what? A continent away, hay pours into a field. Each time my father waves across the shore, I dissolve one part more. I live in Bellingham, and I didn't know at the time that if you live that far out in the woods, spiders just live with you. So this is dedicated to the spider that bit my face. It's called This Morning I Had the Spider Treatment. A man dressed like Ghostbusters came to my apartment and hushed all their legs with a barely silent snake hiss of a spray. I think about the spider I caught in my teacup the day before, its legs curled like the hopeless crane claw of every hopeless Jersey arcade, barely brushing each plush Hello Kitty I wanted so damn badly. How, when I tossed the spider out my window, its hairy body shook from the cold leaves on the even colder ground, clinging to the alligator hide of a black gum tree, and looked back at its warm home, back at me, its a victor, and thought, what kind of vengeance are you worth? Valid, I say, but I want to tell you about the men who have evicted me from their lives, how cold the floor my clothes are swept up and out, how my hair still tangles in their carpets full of loose change I would most definitely use exactly, or how my father thinks of me only when he passes a park full of empty swing sets. Vengeance, maybe. I deserve it. But you did bite my face in the middle of the night, against my knowledge, against my crane claw breath, a wreath for your holiday home. In a minute, you did crawl a bit along my mouth, tendered your legs in leftover lipstick. How are you any different from any man? I know my lips are full. What kind of vengeance are you worth for a kiss I did not ask for? Down with that spider. 29, back in my mom's voice. To live like a pill bug, I curled into myself. I greeted knee after knee. Surely it's too bad to want company, to want this curling of my legs around anyone's face. These days, I have taken to small boxes of self, folded neatly for recycling. These small towers at the ready, to undo that which can't be undone. At 17, I cut a boy and hid in a barn until the rice fields rotted over. Spores of grain inoculated the village. In Jersey, forgiveness is an activity too extracurricular for the rose. In Jersey, gulls dip their heads into ice coolers. I press a can against my cheek, cold to watch some stranger look and nothing more. I imagine a queen surveying her ruined empire centuries ago, brick by thrown brick, each layer underfoot, blood and rust and smoke. I'm that person who can't stop looking. I sweep the kitchen floor with all the lights on. I pry open every hill, each ant with ribs of gold. That's a true story. My mom actually did cut a boy's foot open when she was 17 because he was kicking her chair in school. She brought a knife to school and cut his foot. And that's when I learned not to mess with my mom, ever. So don't mess with her. I wanted to read a newer poem. And, you know, it's kind of a fascinating journey writing these poems. for my next book, mostly because it really engages a history that's not really written about, which is the Great Leap Forward in China, which happened from 1958 to 1962. It was right before the Cultural Revolution. It was a Maoist campaign and ended in mass starvation. And it's funny to do research because there's so much propaganda in China, so there's like not really much information about it. And the one book that just came out a few years ago on this topic called Tombstone is banned in China. And so it's been a unique journey trying to track my family's history in it. My grandfather was abandoned, or his family members went missing during that time period. No one uses the word starvation, but he was basically orphaned and his sisters disappeared. And he was adopted by an older man whose family also disappeared. So I put the dates together and I'm like, okay, I think my family starved during the Great Leap Forward based on the fact that they were living in the countryside and that's where the campaign was. So it's been fascinating trying to deal with that history when it's not acknowledged. So what I've been doing to try to deal with the fact that I can't access facts, I can't access history, and no one in my family wants to talk about it, is to just write letters to those dead relatives. I've just been writing these letters to them. So here's one of the letters, and it's called When You Died. I went to the library to find you. I stained a book on Maoist era politics with a tomato soup I had microwaved earlier, and it crusted the page like a ridge in the Grand Canyon on the surface of Mars and love, or an army uniform cratered in the blood of others. I am sorry, I do not know which analogy to use, what to say to the fact of it all. 36 million deaths from 1958 to 1962, estimated. What no one talks about, called epidemic, not starvation. At my grandmother's grave in Jersey, the ground was as soft as a perfectly poached egg. I almost plunged my arms into the soil to touch her, her purple jade bracelet shining like the ring of an undiscovered planet, or a truant yam among all this empty clay, all this empty. I am sorry to give you that hope. I did not plunge my arms into the earth. I held these Safeway flowers dipped in bleach and blue, these wrinkled petal faces drifting in gasoline, air. This yawning gap between us all. The more things change, what remains the same? It's funny too, because I grew up in a restaurant, I was surrounded by food and was like stuffed as a child. I think I weirdly am eating for my ghosts. It's like I can't help the gluttony as a result of my family's history. I'll just read a few more poems. This one is called Blood, speaking of family. Has anyone ever had pig's blood before? Okay, a few of you, not all of you. It's an acquired taste. It tastes like blood, so I'll tell you that. I don't know if that's like something, if you want to try it, if you're into blood, you can try it. If you like, it's like the new vampire, you know, vibe that everyone has these days, you know, is part of it. But I can't help but think of lineage too. But it's also my mom's favorite thing to eat is pig's blood. This poem's called Blood. My mother told me not to drink pig's blood unless I desire health. Gold should not enter the heart or be melted into teeth. But look how our faces shine, these crystallizing caves caved in to keep our bloody splendor. Now you know where I've been, black ink on palm, pumiced night. Face to face we fought, in glory, in red, in arms our own. The soldiers filled the streets with shove and see. Little stars, little flashlights in my hair. To clear myself from blame, I erased my birthmarks. Held under strong sunlight, everything disappears or blooms. Peaches fall in the yard as we fall asleep, stunned and sweet. The saying goes and goes, keep your eyes closed when walking, keep your close ones loved and close them. Walk hand in hand among the graves. To lead people into disaster, to boil a chicken with its head cut off, why would someone do such a thing? 100 flowers explode over our heads. I took shelter in stems and seed. I held your hand to make a root. To stay intact, we must keep everything in. No blood must be lost or stolen. If you bury something, do not pick it up. Chances are it is a beast. It will bite you in the eye and blindness will take your name. I do not know my grandfather's name. I know he cleaned soup bowls during the Cultural Revolution. I know to stay away from butterflies in butter, from counterfeit faces, to tell them apart. Can you tear yourself apart? The leeches on my back have sprung open. A new organ grows in my heart. It is a double heart. Too much blood makes my eyes milk over. I'm afraid to pour out and keep in. I wobble along the street. Everyone can see, everyone points. At home, my brother makes a habit of sleeping underneath transparent surfaces. Our kitchen table is made of glass and glistens when he sleeps. I cough up a failure in the middle of the winter. My family huddles in the attic, dark lambs. The soap in my hair softens with snow. In summer, pig's blood swelters in a tin. A man kicks my mother. There's something wrong with his leg or she is in love. My mother cuts open his foot. She tells them, where the sparks cannot get through, that's where you'll rest. My mother is 17 and she cut a boy, and I know her name. Her name is Jin Ai. A bone drops to the floor. Ants gather in corners, my family gathering their faces. This funeral of plenty sings dirges in the marrow. This living hand now warm and capable, my blood thick with stars. That one's for my grandfather too. And I don't know his name. I'm not allowed to. I can only call him Gong Gong. It's a sign of honor not to call him by his actual name, just his title. Still don't know, and I'm just like, you know, I should find out one day, but also don't want to for some reason or another. I'll just end with a poem in my mom's voice. Yes. Now she's 43. The buzz of a mosquito warms my throat. Soon it will die. It is midnight after all. I open the refrigerator and scoop out the cheeks of a fish. I call the fish my husband. I call Jane in Hong Kong, but she doesn't answer. I cut the ends off a string bean and call that Stephen. These days, there's dust on my forehead I can't seem to dust off. My cleanliness on loan, the loans I owe stacked neatly like bowls of artichokes. To pry myself apart, to pry apart my pride. Ice dissolves part by part and is gone. To not be able to call that myself. There is ozone in the sky, gathering the cruel words we say to each other. I saw that on TV once when I just couldn't sleep. I'll stop there.
That was Jane Wong, Stephanie Adams Santos, and Shayla Lawson from Poetry on Broadway in 2018. This has been Literary Arts, the Archive Project. It's a retrospective of some of the most engaging talks from the world's best writers from more than 30 years of literary arts in Portland. Join us next time for the Archive Project, a literary arts production in collaboration with Oregon Public Broadcasting. To hear more from the Archive Project, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Support for the Archive Project comes from Cole Haan, a fashion brand that aims to inspire and empower people to live an extraordinary life. All this and more at colehaan.com. Our show is produced by Crystal Liguori for radio and podcast. Special thanks to the Literary Arts staff, board, and community. This show would not be possible without them. Thanks also to the band Emancipator for our theme music, and thanks to all of you for listening. I'm Andrew Proctor, and this has been another edition of the Archive Project from Literary Arts. Join us next time and find your story here.